Digging the new do, man. Like, got the everything buzzed down, the goats all nice and trimmed, and
yeah, you know, partially on purpose.
Okay,
you know, as it so often is the case with me. So the buzz cut, that was definitely a planned thing. Like, I don't know, man. It's one of those things. My whole goal in life is to be low maintenance. And so, like, I buzz it down to nothing,
mm-hmm.
and then I just, once it starts getting, like, long enough that the sides are flipping out, because the top doesn't get longer anymore. I've made peace with that. But, like, as the sides get to where, like, I might have to start brushing my hair, okay, cool, time to buzz it all again.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's cleaning up that area where, like, the beard and the sideburns kind of mesh,
yeah,
I can never get that right. And so that's how I ended up with the goatee this time.
Nice.
I was like, oh, okay, well, she's like, once nope. I've gotten halfway it, through the nope. cheeks,
dang it.
It's, no. yeah. It's like, well, yeah. All right, I guess I'll just go ahead and go with the goat and see what happens.
Yep, not bad at all. That's been like one of the other blessings of COVID is that I cut my own hair now. You know, like we bought the thing and I'm just like I wear a hat all the time. Like it doesn't really matter. So it's just like, I just cut it all the same length. And then, you know, if I'm really feeling fancy, I'll try to do like the bottom a different height.
Yeah.
But like, it's usually not that, like, nobody cares. So,
yeah. Well, that was, you know, I had for a long time, I had always kind of, because, you know, I used to always do like a buzz cut and things, mm-hmm. but I never went like this short. And it was really during COVID where I was like, you know what? I've always kind of wanted to try that and no one's going to see me for like a couple months anyway. Right. So I've got time. If it's a really bad idea, it'll grow out before I'm allowed to interact with other people mm-hmm. again. So might as well.
Yeah. The only hard part is you just got to make sure you don't get a sunburn.
Yeah.
That's the hardest part. So, all right. Okay. All right. Let's hit an intro and jump into it. Welcome to the podcast, Blue Collar Scholars. Not long ago, a group of brilliant minds met together at a pub to discuss their unfinished works. They recognized the value of coming together around delicious beverages and having meaningful conversations. That group was known as the Inklings. The Inkledoo podcast here, we're working to be the second iteration of that group. So pour yourself a craft beverage, pull up a chair, and join the conversation. Okay, so I'm just going to full out, just be honest, and I have nothing to report on. I have nothing interesting. So I'm hoping you have something, maybe something from last week we commandeered. Well, I don't know.
So, unfortunately, I really hate to let you down like this, but no, I honestly haven't had much exciting. I don't know. I've been, we've finally gotten to the spot. This is the, it's not really an excuse, but it's the closest thing I've got, so I'm going to run with it. We've been talking so much about how, like, the weather mm-hmm. has stayed Phoenix cool.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
not nice, but Phoenix cool. And then all of a sudden this week it decided, no, we're going to be 110, mm-hmm. like, all the time. And, you know, actually I did have I had a wine, actually, which I haven't done Ooh. In quite a while. So I'll go with this. It was, I can even remember what the brand was. I had one of my buddies was doing kind of a semi nice kind of seafood dinner. He was cooking at his house and like invited a group of us over. And I was tasked with picking up this wine that he recommended because he knows okay. things. And I definitely don't, but it was a Chablis. So it's a white wine. It goes really nice mm-hmm. with seafood because it does like really pair with like it's got a little bit of a sweetness to it. And it was called Labour Gontard is like the
because yeah, we're so sorry, good at the
is the vineyard Labour Gontard Chablis. It was a 2021, which was apparently a pretty good year. But no, it was a nice, easy drinking white. A lot of the seafood that we had was kind of like flash fried type okay. stuff. Well, pan fried, not like deep fry or anything, but like soft shell crab and things like that. And the batter was really salty, like deliciously salty, like that potato chip style yep. salty where it's like, oh, it is exactly salty enough that I need to keep yep. eating more of it. And so having this really kind of clean, sweet Chablis going with it was potentially a dangerous pairing if we, you know, hadn't been limited in the quantity of wine that was available on hand. Like, it drank really easy, and you know my level of restraint when it comes to the food. So if I had been just like one doing that pairing been, back and forth. Oh, yeah. Well, especially because I don't drink wine often. And so
gauging it is different.
And wine. Yeah, absolutely. And it also, like, wine doesn't taste like it's really strong.
Correct. Alcohol. But it is.
You know, because, like, I'll do whiskey and things like that, and that it's really easy for me to keep track of, just make sure I'm doing sips and those kinds of things, because it tastes like alcohol. Wine, on the other hand, especially, you know, in a setting like that where you've got the food and the drink and everything, it would have been really easy to just, you know, down a glass and then have another as if I was drinking beer. And it is definitely not. But that, so that
beer
was
runs at, well, like, normal 5%, and wine is normal at 12%, and the high ones are at 14%, and you're like, a high beer is 10, you know? So, like, the lowest wines are above the highest beers, you know? So it's, yeah, I agree. I've always wanted to do that. Like, my family doesn't eat a lot of fish, so I don't get the opportunity to pair that very much. So,
this is my Southern comfort buddy from Louisiana, and so, like, he when he starts getting a craving for home, it normally means he's getting some
fish.
Really good, like, shrimp, crab, lobster every now and then. And again, my job then is to show up with some of the alcohol, and it's like, yeah, that's always a fair deal.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. Not bad, not bad at all. Nice, man.
Yeah, considering I walked into it thinking I had nothing to talk about, it's like, actually,
yeah.
I did do things.
That's the hardest part, man, is just, like, becoming aware of what you do, you know? Like, you do so many things, and I'm sure I've had stuff that I don't remember, but, like, I just, nothing committed to my memory, and so it's just kind of off it went, you know? Like, there was no point, but oh well.
Yeah, I mean, that was literally just Friday. I've had Saturday and Sunday since then, with not a whole lot going on either of those days. And I've absolutely managed to, like, forget that that was a thing that happened. Even talking about it, it felt like I was talking about an event from 2 weeks ago.
So for the conversation today, you brought up an interesting point, and I kind of wanted to get, like, I had a spin that I thought about throwing on it, but I was like, man, I kind of want to hear what you were chewing on, like, the context on where it came from, on being like, worthy of Christ. I was like, I like this topic, but I wanted to know where you were coming from.
Yeah. So basically what happened was on Sunday, the readings at Mass, the gospel reading was from the Gospel of Matthew chapter 10, starting in verse 37. And the gospel reading just starts off with Jesus saying, anyone who loves their mother and father more than me is not worthy of me. Anyone who will not take up their cross and follow me is not worthy of me. And the homily was, you know, not a spectacular one per se, but it was good and kind of took an angle on it that I'm not used to. You know, because this whole idea, I'm so used to when we hear things like this or the similar gospel reading from Luke where Jesus says, anyone who does not hate their mother and father cannot follow me into my kingdom. And it's like, when we hear those, a lot of times the tendency for those who are preaching on it is to talk about the idea of, well, I know this sounds really harsh. But that's not really what Jesus means. And there's a totally appropriate place for that. Don't get me wrong. But it's also kind of one of those things where it's like, yeah, no. And I get that. And it's not, I don't want to say that, like, the homily should not be directed at
right.
To be fair, you know.
Well, you sugarcoat difficult things to swallow for kids.
For kids,
well, I mean, like, just, like, in general, like, medicine.
People who are just coming
like
back.
For a kid, you put medicine, you put sugar in medicine so that they'll swallow it, and that's kind of what you do with the tough subjects. When Christ drops a bomb, you're like, okay, hang on, whoa, kid, don't hate me, all right? Like, I'm doing the best I can. But yes. Then once you get to a certain point, like, you got to start addressing the fact that this is not just a – you got to pull out what he's actually saying.
Exactly. You can't explain it away. You have to explain it, which is different. You know, it's almost that Einstein had the quote, or at least one of the many quotes associated with him, the one where he said something about the idea of, like, need to make this as simple as possible, but no simpler.
Yep.
Yeah, like that kind of thing where it's like, yeah, no. I get if I'm someone who has, like, been away from the faith for a while or is just coming into the faith either way, and I come in and the first Sunday that I happen to show up for, Jesus is telling me I've got to hate to be his follower, or, like, or, you know, if I'm coming in and I have just lost someone in my family really close to me, has passed away, and I'm being told about this idea of I can't love them more than I love Christ, I, like, there's a possibility there of that being very off-putting. And so I get where that initial explanation comes from. And so there was a little bit of that in this Sunday homily, but then he started talking about just the idea of, you know, what it actually kind of implies when Jesus says, like, these are the people who are not worthy of him. So what does that mean on the flip side of it? Like, what does it actually take to be worthy of Christ? And again, it wasn't, like, super fleshed out or anything, but it was a thought that just sort of, like, embedded itself in the back of my brain and won't leave me alone. Talking about this idea of, like, if you look at it, the bar Jesus gives for being worthy of him, for being worthy of his kingdom, it's not complicated. It's not necessarily easy, but it's pretty simple. Love God above all else and take up your cross. Like, those are kind of the two requirements. And yeah, like, the idea that as someone who has a tendency to, like, really kind of struggle and get caught up in the idea of, you know, the fact that I can't make myself worthy of Christ, hearing it put kind of black and white like that kind of hit me, where I was like, oh, that's right, because I'm not the one who makes me worthy. He is. And he said this is what he's asking of me in exchange for him making me worthy.
Yeah, I have to be honest. The idea of being made worthy, being simple, like, hits weird, you know? Because, like, that's something I've struggled with my whole life, you know? Like just the idea that I'm not worthy and constantly struggling to be worthy, you know, that we've talked about it a hundred times, and, like, trying to, you know, just get in the door of heaven, not necessarily, like, you know, an earning and all the different things, you know, like, that all comes from the idea of worth. And to be honest, like, the idea of imputed worth is hard to reconcile because it's not something that you feel, right? Like, just, like, imputed righteousness, right? Like, or any of these things that, like, God or Christ gives us because of him and our nature of our relationship to him, you don't necessarily feel those things to internalize them and understand them. And so, like, that's something that's hard to take in your brain and move it down into, like, the heart area.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I mean, so when we talk about this idea of the imputed righteousness, or, like, the given worthiness, it's one of those things where I think a big part of the struggle is kind of the conflict that arises from kind of a and I don't want to, like, take this into a screw it. Anyway, here we go. Basically, I think a lot of it comes down to it's Luther's fault, you know, where he talked about that idea of the way grace works basically being like the snow falling on the dung heap. And I think that idea of, like, an imputed righteousness is where, for me personally, so much of the struggle,
at least from the American perspective, like, for sure, because, like, I mean, we took that into the Puritans, into the, the holiness movement. Like, I mean, American Protestantism took it and compounded on what Luther did, you know, 10x.
And I've always been in, like, the, in terms of officially, at least, I've always been in the Catholic Church. Yeah. I haven't really been part of any Protestant movements or anything, but it's, like, ingrained in the American understanding of things. And I think that's where a lot of the problem comes in, because, again, all that would be is covering up the fact that we're still a pile of crap. And so it's like the all that grace does, it doesn't change anything about us. It just makes us look better.
Yeah.
And that feels hollow and empty.
Yeah.
But like it is more of a I think what it actually is when we're talking about this idea of an imputed holiness is it's more it's less like that and more like when you're teaching a kid how to ride a bike. And like, yeah, that part, specifically that part where you get to it, where like you're holding on to the back of the bike and you're letting go and still running behind them without letting them know you've let go yet. Like it's this slow process whereby Christ helps us step by step to become more like him. Even with that idea of like the grace falling over it, but continuing on with that idea, where as the snow, like, it's mixing. It's becoming part of it. Because it's not just an external thing. But it, yeah, it... And that's where I like the phrase that he is making us worthy, as opposed to, like... It's not necessarily less true to say he's declaring us worthy.
Yeah.
Like, that's just as true. But for me, the meaning of it is more clear when I say he's making us worthy. Like that transformation is happening within us through our cooperation with him.
Right.
Where he is bringing us to where we need to be, as opposed to just saying, no, you're fine. Because I'm so good that I can make up for how good you aren't.
Right. And I think too, like if we dig into like the source of all of it, is that it's very... egocentric. And so we're very focused about ourselves. Like we're thinking about, I'm not this and I'm this and I'm me, I. And yeah, it's really what God is saying in all of this stuff. And I really should just go with it and act like this is totally my thought, but like I'm stealing some of your comments from the notes and acting like they're mine. But that, you know, it's about God setting the priorities for us, right? Like, what's the first commandment? Love your God, you know, above all, you know. Yeah. So that's kind of what they're saying too. Like, he's taking the example of what is the one thing that you would love forever is your mama, right? Like you don't ever be like, you know, that's just one of those things. Like, even in the schoolyard, like the fist fights were always over your mama jokes, you know, because that's the one thing that's there, you know? And so he's framing that in that, like, look, even above mom and dad, like comparatively, your love for God, comparing to your mom and dad, it almost looks like you hate your mom and dad compared to how much you love God, right? And so like you're reframing that from me and I and what I have and what I know and framing it towards the priority of God above ourselves.
Yeah, it's very much about that idea of not getting so wrapped up in the gift that you forget who the giver of the gift is. You know, like when you're a little kid, yes, the present itself is the thing that matters. And that's why you have the little kid who causes the scene that mom and dad then have to like apologize for because like the kid didn't want this present.
Been there. Yep.
And they're like, they're mad and they're crying, not tears of joy, but tears of genuine like,
I didn't sadness ask for this.
And
rage
because you got the worst gift. And like, as a little kid, like, that's still like, if you're the one who got them that gift, that hurts. That cuts real, real deep. But you kind of understand. Like, this is that whole no filter thing. and that whole lack of awareness thing. Because again, kids are naturally selfish. Like, there's no malicious intent behind it. It's just, well, this is a gift for me. So obviously this is about me. And if I don't want this gift, then this is a bad gift. As we get older, though, we're supposed to be able to move into that spot of realizing the gift is cool, sure. But the reason the gift matters is less because of the gift itself and what it is, and more about these people wanted to celebrate me. Their love for me is such that they wanted to do this for me. And that's the part that's meaningful. Right. And so at that point, even if you got a gift that you don't really have a particular use for or desire for, that like doesn't matter because the gift is less important than the giver. And that's where we're supposed to be with God. And I think this is one of those situations where like I like Matthew's translation of it, the way Matthew writes it down is this idea of like love Christ more than you love your mother and father, as opposed to Luke where it says if you do not hate them, because like that part's way easier for me to get.
Yeah,
like it's there's no mental block for me there. If it's like, oh yeah, obviously, like I love my mom and dad, but even my mom and dad, as great as they are, they're a gift that God gave me.
Right.
And so I want to be more grateful to him. And like, I get in Luke what he's talking about. Like, I do. I understand the idea that it's like, if they're in conflict, if your relationship with your parents, with your friends, with your children, if your relationships with any of these people is in conflict with your relationship with me, you've got to be willing to let it go.
Yeah.
And you've got to be willing to choose me first. And so I get it. But man,
that's a big one.
The idea of if you do not hate, it's like,
that's a lot. Yeah. And I also think that there's an opportunity for like our extremist tendencies in that too, where, cause there's perspective and, you know, like, again, we're kind of drawing out from a total story what we believe Christ is telling us there.
Yeah.
You know, but like, if you were to read it just as it is, you can come to the conclusion where like, if I don't hate everything in this created world and I'm only focused on the next world, like it's, I had a friend, at one point say that he was an atheist friend. He didn't understand the religious life because he was like, if you believe in heaven, he's like, why wouldn't you just go jump off a cliff and get there? He's like, you know, like, he's like, why would you stay here? Like, that doesn't make any sense. Why would you keep going here if you believed in there? Like, why wouldn't you just go end it? And I was like, that's not really how it works. But it made sense. Like, I understood.
There's a logic there,
right. And you know, like, that's one of the verses that gets used. Like, if you don't hate your mother and father, then you can't, you know, and you're like, oh, hang on, man. Like, you, and so then you come to this point and be like, well, I guess then there is nothing good here in creation, right? And then you have Paul, some of Paul's language also kind of like you can take into it where it's like, there's no good thing. And like you start to draw these conclusions that there is no good in creation. And you start having these thoughts that like, that's where you come to these like Luther's conclusion that we're like, everything here is just a pile of crap. And the only thing that was ever good is this little bit of heaven that came down, but he went back up. And then luckily he gave us a snow of the Holy Spirit to cover all of this crap. But like, there's that extremist in this thing that says there is no good here.
Right. And it almost becomes this thing. Cause like the next thing Christ talks about is the importance of embracing our cross. And I know people who that's their approach is, well, obviously the reason why I don't jump off a cliff and end it now is because I was told to embrace this cross. Mm-hmm. And like, it's such a like heavy view, this idea that all of creation and my existence in this world is the cross that I'm bearing. It's not that there are sufferings in this life that are a cross for me to bear. It's that this experience of reality is the cross that I have to bear to get my eternal reward.
Oh.
It's like, holy cow.
You know what? Man. I've never framed it that way. I always considered it a specific cross and not the general existence of life.
And I'm really glad that's the case, because I, like, that's how I view it as well, is that, like, there are, I have crosses. But, like, life itself is a gift. God didn't create this world to, like, brutalize us so we would appreciate how good heaven is.
Yeah, that's true. Because I was about that, okay. Because I was about to say that, like, that kind of makes sense. Like, it is, like, life is not far from the, like, our experience. It's not unfair to rationalize it as, you know, the journey of Christ's cross. Like, if you were to take the 12 stations of the cross and be like, oh, that's what life is, basically. And it's suffering, yeah. But it's also with a goal in mind. And, like, you can rationalize it, but then, like, you make a good point. Like, God wouldn't create us and just put us here just to, like, but wouldn't he? Like, I don't know. Like that's like you would make people go through training, like basic training before you go in. No,
you would. You would absolutely make them go through training. But like, okay, so let's put it in the context of something that I never do. Let's put it in the context of a workout.
okay.
So like, yes, the training is important. The pain from like maxing out, putting your reps in, or like, even just the cardio work and that pain and that like burning in the lungs and everything that happens. Yeah, that is suffering and it's important to go through. It serves a purpose. But if you don't take the rest day, if there aren't the non-cross parts of our existence too, like you got to remember, man, Christ was here for 33 years. He embraced his cross for hours.
Yeah, touche. Yeah. Yeah.
Like that. And so there's, yes, the suffering is very real. And like the cross is perpetually a part of our existence, but it's not our whole existence. Mm-hmm. Like, what does God say in creation? It is good.
Right.
Like, creation is, and this is where we can run into, you know, there's such a disconnect between the way we use words and the way we think about concepts from the way that like when Paul is writing about the flesh, you know, the struggles with his flesh, like there's such a disconnect between the way we view that and the way he was. Because like we hear that and like you said, oh, well then, yeah, my body is this like prison for my soul. And yet we have like all of these references to the good of being the body of Christ, of, you know, our hands and our feet being used for that. The idea of using our body to run so as to win the race, you know, like.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, I had a thought and it's interesting to me. This is all interesting to me. And I think if I were going to pull it all together and smash my thought into my life lesson here is just that, like, when you're thinking about, you know, is there anything good in this world, taking up your cross, like this whole kind of situation and your prioritization, like it's a full picture where we're looking at God and saying God is number one. He has a call on our life, just like Christ had a mission to fulfill. And it was basically getting in the game, right? So Christ came to earth to do his mission, right? That's kind of us. Like, your value comes from being in the game, right? Like, if you were to sit on the sidelines, you know, like loving yourself, paying attention to yourself, not wanting to engage in the pain or the struggle that comes with doing good, if you're going to sit on the sidelines, then you might as well not be on the team, right? But like, in order to add value, all you have to do is get in the game. All you have to do is play. Nobody's asking you to be the all-star, right? Just get on the field and contribute, right? Prepare, practice, and then just do something. Like, just that's all there is. And that as you play, you'll get better, you know, and all these kind of things. And so when it's, you know, that's my thought, is just looking at yourself is not, I'm struggling with my thought, and I apologize, but it's just,
no, you're good.
You know, like, when we're looking at ourselves, we think that this is the most good that we can have, because the most good that can be had in Earth comes with struggle. And so it's hard to break off of that selfishness and get in the game. And so when Christ says, you know, like, if you don't hate these things, then you won't do it. And that's because it's hard to break into that. Like, it's hard to get away from ourselves and get into the game, because it's difficult. And I think that's the big thing. And I think boiling it down in a long-winded, roundabout, poorly spoken way is that, you know, like, just, screw it. My thought is totally crapped out on me, man. Like, I felt like I was going somewhere, and then I couldn't get there.
Well, but I mean, like, what you're talking about is that idea of remembering that we're on a team. Like, getting into the game, it's a team game. Like, we have a role to play, that call mm-hmm. for us. But that, like, ultimately, it's not all about us. Like, we are part of a team. We've got people there who are going to support us. Specifically, we've got three persons of the Trinity who are there who are going to support us, which means we've pretty much got it all locked down. Like, legitimately, like you said, the only way we're going to screw it up is if we cause the forfeit by not going out on the field.
Yeah.
Like, that's literally it. But I think, like, it is really tough to move past that, especially, you know, again, that American mindset. We're very big on individualism and what I can do and what I can bring and what I have to be. And, like, if I'm not, like, a star player, then why even bother being on the team? You know? And so we do need that ability to hate anything that would hold us back from getting out there. We have to be able to work up the understanding of the value of the game and realize that the value of all of the other stuff is so much lower than that. And so I think that's entirely accurate and entirely good. And I think it really ties into, for me, kind of my big thing is, when Christ tells us to take up our cross, this is the thing that, like, well, it's not the thing. It's one of the major things that, like, separates me from the saints, is that I still look at the cross and see it as a burden. Mm. And when you read the lives of the saints, and when you look at Christ, when he's mocked by the others who are being crucified for the way he embraces that cross, the recognition that even the suffering is a gift. Mm. That, like, because it is the training, because the cross isn't the end. Yeah, the cross would be an evil if that suffering
was the end.
Were the end of the story. But because that suffering is redemptive, because that suffering is a training, because that suffering is a salvation for myself and for others, like, I'm invited to participate in that. I'm invited to, St. Paul talks about in one of the phrases that, like, we could absolutely do 30 podcasts on and not actually come to any understanding. But, like, St. Paul's thing about being invited to fill in what is lacking in the sacrifice of Christ. Like, that idea that we're able to contribute into that through our suffering. It's like, oh no, this is an incredible gift. And if I am able to, and in my very best moments, for about 5 seconds at a time, I can make that connection and, like, hold on to it. And then ultimately I keep coming back to, but it sucks. But if we can make that connection and recognize that, like, the suffering is just that, it is the training. It is me building up not just my spiritual muscles, but it is more like kind of what you were talking about in the team concept. This is us going through drills before the game so that, you know, in the middle of the basketball game, I don't have to look at you and tell you anything. I know if I put the ball there, you're cutting and you've got the layup. You know what I mean? Like, we're building in that spiritual muscle memory such that we will be able to enjoy the rewards of heaven on a level that we can't fathom. When Paul says that I view the sufferings of this life as nothing, that's not coming from a guy who doesn't know what suffering is. That's coming from a guy who knows the depths of human suffering and has had the tiniest foretaste of what heaven's going to be, and that little tiny foretaste is still enough for him to go like, oh yeah, yeah. None of this crap matters at all. Yep,
sets that priority. But perspective, not priority, you know? That's good. I like that. That's good, man. And yeah, I feel bad not being able to connect all my thoughts, but that's proof that I probably need a little more coffee. And so
that's where I was going.
If you're struggling, like you just listened to me struggle for the last 30 minutes to connect my thoughts, then, you know, jump on that Inkledoo website, order a couple bags of coffee. We'll send you some fresh roasted coffee to help you with your meaningful conversations. That's also how you support our meaningful conversations, because these are important. They help us grow. They help everybody. We hope you're having meaningful conversations as well, because it is the training ground. It's that practice. And it's frankly, it's just enjoyable. I don't know. I like it. Yeah. So
100%.
You got anything else on your brain?
Yeah. You know, just it occurred to me that like in this podcast, it feels like I've brought up being American a few times and like pretty consistently talking about some of the negative
as it's going to publish on the day after 4th of July.
Yeah. And we're recording this on the 3rd. I'll be editing it on the 4th. We'll be publishing it on the 5th. You know what? Again, that idea of recognizing the gift and how blessed we are. But, so I hope everyone has had a phenomenal 4th of July by the time you're hearing this.
But we also serve Christ first, you know, then America.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. 100%.
But
Christ has given us this incredible opportunity to serve him here as opposed to some of the other options. All right?
Yes. All right. Right on. With that, we will say
adieu.